Okay. I like this. You are now listening to the Boss Fight Podcast. Settle in. Listen to the ocarina. Do what you do. Let's go.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Boss Fight Podcast. I am your magnanimous host, Steven Savelli, and I am joined today by my favorite co-host in the multiverse, my buddy, my guy, my pal, Paul Edwards. What's up, man?
How are you doing, man? I'm doing real good.
I am like a 9 out of 10.
9 is lower than you sometimes say.
I know, I'm usually like 100% in a good mood.
What's bringing you so down?
We just watched some like Alex Jones clips and talked about weird conspiracy theorists for the last 30 minutes. And like sometimes that just brings me down to know that there's so many people like that in the world.
Yeah, that tends to happen when you go down the rabbit hole.
But they were funny.
They were very funny. I am sweating.
That guy's a lunatic.
He is.
Yeah, it's April 30th, 2020. If you are listening to this in the year 3020, this is the time of human history called the coronavirus era. And we're 100 years plus on the Spanish flu, so hopefully in 3020 you guys are doing okay.
I'm hoping so, because you've got some time to figure it out.
Yeah, you have some time to figure it out. Hopefully my son and other genius kids around the world can fix all of humans' problems. But anyway, how are you doing in isolation?
I feel like I was born for this. I feel like I have been training for this my entire life.
Yeah, man. I think our type of people, which is like the nerdy community, this is our time to shine.
It really is.
Not only are we at home doing things we love, like playing video games and making music and doing podcasts, but also we are the type of people that have jobs that can work from home.
Yeah, lucky us. Lucky us.
The nerds are the top tier race right now in the world.
Yeah, I feel like my whole life leading up to this was like a montage, like a Rocky style montage of music, and it led to the reality where I'm in this chair that I'm in right now for approximately 16 hours per day.
Yeah, so you're working from home.
Yep.
I'm working from home.
Mm-hmm.
Is it weird not going out, or are you cool with it?
Pretty cool with it, man. I'm pretty cool with it. I really don't like anybody. As I get older, I'm finding that to be more true. And I'm pretty content with ordering things on the internet and escaping into virtual worlds.
Yeah. I really like it, too, other than my creativity around like photography and videography. Mm-hmm. So I miss going outside and taking photos and doing video. But other than that, call me happy.
Boom.
Have you run out of things to do?
Absolutely not. I feel like I haven't even scratched the surface on things to do yet. I haven't even started.
Because I haven't even started like any of the like laundry list of books. I have 14 Audible credits right now that I really need to start using.
Dang.
Yeah.
Stacking.
I'm stacking. But so what are you spending your time doing? Obviously, you haven't scratched the surface, but you are staying busy.
Yep. So primarily working on music, as you may or may not know. Not doing podcast episodes. That has been a bit of an oversight up to this point. But hey, we're back. We're back. And really, I've just been grinding real hard on Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Final Fantasy VII in a minute. Yeah, we've not been doing podcasts. I have some fun life updates. I'll give my life update now. You know, like, I keep giving these weird updates of all the places I've been around the world.
And very cocky.
Yeah. I've luckily escaped the COVID-19 traveling to like four continents in the last 3 months, but
you are the problem.
I am moving to Toronto, Canada.
Wow.
From Melbourne, Australia. So one of the difficulties of us doing the podcast lately is like my house has been packed up, don't have my computer. And my family and I are making our way to Canada.
I appreciate you using that as the reason why we haven't done the podcast versus me slacking. So thank you for taking one for the team.
Yes, I will blame it on me. We all know who the problem is in this relationship. But yeah, moving to Toronto, I'm really excited. We are halfway there. So we're now currently in the Seattle area in the U.S. And we're just waiting to get approval from the government of Canada and immigration to allow me to enter on my work visa.
It's very exciting.
It is actually super exciting. Toronto's Awesome.
I'm very excited to visit. And I'm also very excited that you're only going to be 3 hours apart.
It's
meaning we could record at normal hours.
Oh, you're talking about time zone.
Yeah. Time zone.
Yeah. We will easily be able to do this more, and we will be able to do like video live streaming podcasts.
Wow. That's a big goal right there.
Which I've already downloaded the app. I've already made all of our graphics.
Mm-hmm.
I just got to get to my house in Toronto and buy my webcam, and then we're set. We're going to do video live streams on like Facebook, YouTube, and
so
Twitter.
Exciting. So very exciting.
It is pretty exciting because we can like answer questions live and all that sort of stuff. But
mm-hmm.
So we'll be doing these normal recorded ones, but then we'll be doing video. So
I have a life update.
Yeah.
I made the greatest choice / mistake that humans make, and I got a puppy.
You're one of the damn people. You're one of the problems in the world. Who on coronavirus lockdown decided to go get a puppy from a shelter.
Yeah.
There's shelters that are out of puppies now, which is great for dogs.
Yeah. To be fair, I know, we were going to do this before.
Here we go. Okay. Here it
Look,
is.
We had plans. We had plans to get a border collie puppy.
I mean, when I was here in February, before all this, we were hanging out. Yes, you guys had already had the dog you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were gonna get a border collie.
I'm going to sit back while you tell this.
We had done research. We were like, okay, border collies, smartest dogs there are. Little high maintenance, but, you know, hey, one of us already worked from home. So it's like, this is perfect. We got a yard. Let's get a border collie. So we are going to go through a breeder.
Update. This is like the end of the house updates.
Yeah.
This is like the epilogue.
Ooh, house update. I bought a weed whacker. I love it.
I missed the house updates.
Oh, I got some more if you want.
The dog is the epilogue. Okay.
All right. So, yeah, it was all leading up to the dog. So we do this research. We're like, okay, we're going to get this border collie. We find a breeder that does border collies. As much as I don't really like breeders, it's one of the only ways to get a purebred dog. You know, they preserve a breed. It's not like a toy type of dog or like that. They're a good, real breed of dog, so I don't feel too bad going through a breeder for that.
A border collie, yeah, for sure.
Border collie, legit.
They are hard to find outside of breeders.
Right, right. And so we're going to go through this breeder. And then we're on this Facebook group for this animal rescue in Eastern Washington. And we see this litter of puppies, and they're like, we just found this litter of border collie puppies in the trash because basically the mom was astray and like went into this big trash pile and had puppies in there. So
literally a picture of a trash pile.
Exactly.
With puppies in it.
Exactly. Like a horrible pile of trash.
Yep.
Down in like a hole. There's like seven little puppies in there.
Yep.
Okay. So we see these puppies. We're like, oh my God, this is like fate. They're border collies. We don't have to go through a breeder. We can support an animal rescue. This is just perfect. So we pick out this puppy. She's this little white puppy, blue eyes, little black spot on her eye. The cutest thing probably ever seen, ever. Side note, her original name from the breeder, or sorry, from the rescue was Eon, which is basically my rap name.
Yeah.
So I was like, this is fate. This is fucking, this is meant to be right here.
Yeah.
So we get this puppy. We take her home. We're loving it. We're like, we got this border collie puppy. We're looking at all this border collie research. We're starting to get her into like frisbees, and they're good at herding, and we're looking at all these things.
Have you said her name yet?
We changed her name to Ori.
Ori.
Ori, because we were actually playing Ori in the Blind Forest at the time, and we're like, this little white, cute thing, Ori, it means my light, which is adorable.
Ori kind of looks like a dog.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So we order a DNA test for Ori.
Which I didn't know existed.
They exist.
I've been wanting to do them myself so that they can, while I do it, inject the microchip into my blood. But see, we've been listening.
You got to wait for the COVID vaccine for that.
Oh, yeah, the COVID vaccine. Yeah, Bill Gates is doing it.
You got our number, Bill. Okay. So.
Sorry.
We get the DNA test. I just want to point out that prior to these results, we had started giving her the nickname Ori Povich, because that's adorable, right? Ori Povich.
Yep.
Famous for DNA tests on that show.
Of course.
And lie detector tests. And we got the results back, and she is 0% border collie. 0%. Not even a bit.
Not even a percent.
She is mostly a husky. The most destructive dog breed there is.
Not the opposite of a border collie, but pretty close.
Pretty close. So many things started falling into place. Like, why is she chewing on things? Why does she want to dig my yard? Why is she a nightmare? And, well, turns out she's a husky, and I got duped.
You got duped.
But she's adorable, so I'll give her a pass.
She's really cute.
She's very cute.
And she's really good with people.
Mm-hmm.
Really good with kids. She's just really awesome.
This is such a nerdy podcast right now.
It is.
Just nerding about puppies.
Nerding about puppy DNA tests.
That's about as nerdy as it gets for puppies.
So Paul has a, what, two-month-old?
Mm-hmm.
Puppy.
Three-month-old.
12 weeks. I'm moving to Toronto, but we're almost set.
Almost.
You have your studio set up. I'm going to be, when I get to Toronto, setting up an entire basement YouTube studio. I cannot wait to show people.
Very excited.
What I'm going to be investing in.
I'm going to be spending a lot of time in Toronto, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be having people come to my house and renting out my podcast and studio gear.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I like that.
My goal is to make like $1,000 a month of like discretionary income from like my
side hustle money.
Side hustle, yeah.
I like that. Michael. I like that a lot.
In the next 12 months, I'm going to make $1,000 a month.
That's fantastic. And then you're just going to blow it or what? Reinvest it? Is that going to be your play money?
Oh, I'll certainly buy dumb shit with it. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, 100%.
I'll buy a new drone. I'll buy another camera.
Oh, that's investment. That's busy. That's a write-off right there. That's a tax write-off.
I do own my own company.
Bam.
Bam. So yeah, that's what we've been up to. The COVID. The coronavirus.
COVID life, which I'm sure everyone's just so sick of hearing about.
Yeah, but we're talking about positive things during COVID.
That's what you got to do, right? You got to find a spin because, honestly, there is some upside to being stuck in the house. And really, nerdy shit is one of the big ones. Like, if you are someone who likes video games or even someone who's not, now might be the time to jump in because there's not a lot of better ways to escape the bored tedium of life than video games and comics and books and movies and all this shit.
Yeah. I'm excited for today because we're kind of like stream of consciousness doing this podcast.
Yep, no plan.
We don't have a huge agenda.
Nope.
We have like three things we want to talk about. But side note, since the last time we did an official podcast, I think we've released our full album, Bad Hands.
Yeah.
How you feeling about that release? It's been like, what, a month and a week since we've dropped an album, like worldwide on all streaming platforms.
I think it's really great.
Does it feel weird?
It feels weird. It feels good. Yeah. But it also, you know, it just makes me want to do more.
It's weird when, like, we've been around and making music for a long time. We started in middle school. In high school, we sold our own albums. Like, mm-hmm. we legit sold thousands of albums as, like, 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
Thinking we were really cool.
Yeah.
Well, actually, like, making a lot of money.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome at the time.
Did we sell them for $5 each?
They were 5 or 10. I can't remember. But we made, you know, good 10 plus thousand?
Yeah, I remember like printing them and pressing the graphics on my dad's printer, and he got so pissed that we like went through all the ink. And I was like, Dad, I'll pay you back for this. I promise.
Yeah.
I'm going to be making money.
That's right.
But we sold, what, like 2,000 copies?
Something like that.
5,000? 2,000.
We thought we were famous.
Anyway, the first 30 days, we got over like 30,000 downloads and all that. And then like, I actually feel kind of like, man, that's not that much.
No, it's kind of, it feels too easy to come by these days.
Isn't that weird? We're getting like jaded around releasing music when like, if you break it down, over 1,000 people a day were listening to our album. That's a lot.
That is a lot.
When you look at like, you know, you look at Key Arena and you're like, well, if you fill that twice, that's how many people listened to our album in the last month. That's a lot of people.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's good context.
Anyway.
Because, yeah, it's easy to, like, just move on and not stop and appreciate what you've accomplished. And that's important to do.
My point is we do, like, 2,000 and we, like, think we're the coolest people in the world. And we do, like, 30, 40,000. We're like, oh, man, I hope no one sees that number.
Yeah.
It's so low.
It's because the blood, sweat, and tears that went into those albums. Man, stick it. You know what's funny is my friend Matt, actually destroyed his car stereo playing a copy of that CD because the paper
the one I did, the one I got from Target. Yeah.
The paper CD label
came off. That's because he listened to it too much.
That shit was melting. It was on fire.
You know
spinning.
How much you have to listen to an album to like whew. Pull off that paper stick?
Dude, he was spinning it, man. And
that's
that
so funny.
Came off in his car deck and got stuck, and he never fixed it.
If you, want to listen, like if you want to listen to our album, it's EST20, EST space TWENTY. The album's Bad Hands. It's myself, Paul, and Corey.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
We got more coming.
We have another album coming. Like, it's actually, like, super official. We're already in the works. There's multiple songs in progress.
Yep.
And anyway, it's time for rapid fire questions. yeah, 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 yeah. You know what it's time for. Woo. It's that
rapid fire. Yahoo. Rapid fire.
All right, we are back for our rapid fire questions segment of the podcast.
Yes.
The most highly anticipated, worldly regarded, galaxy manipulated.
We've established that these are not rapid fire questions and have never been that.
Yeah, they're long form
essays. Long form essays.
See, I think this
deep dives into our psyche questions.
But this is kind of like, you know, that's kind of the appeal to the rapid fire questions.
I think it is.
I swear on my life, every time we post on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter and say, hey, does anybody have anything they want us to talk about? All they say is, rapid fire questions. Like, that's what. And then I have to be like, no, like, what do you actually want us to talk about?
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, fine. So, like, this is a fun part. This is fun for us too, actually.
I enjoy it.
Do you want to go first? No, I'll go first. I know damn well you don't have any fucking questions.
I got some.
All right, here's my question. Would you rather, this is my shit, would you rathers. Would you rather live in a virtual reality where you are all powerful, or would you rather live in the real world? Would you rather live in the real world and be able to go anywhere but not be able to interact with anyone or anything?
Wow.
Sorry, do you want me to rephrase this question?
No, I think I got it.
Would you rather be a god in the machine or a ghost in the real world?
Okay, I like that. Concise.
Yeah, concise.
Okay, so do I know that I'm living in a virtual reality? And that there's a reality outside of the virtual reality.
Like Matrix style?
Yeah, because, I mean, if it's a virtual reality, I don't know. It's just reality, right?
So you know that you're in a virtual reality.
Okay, so I know, like, I'm tapped into the Matrix. Style.
Or, yeah, sure.
Got it. Matrix. Okay. Ready Player One style. I like that. That's interesting. That changes things a bit.
Why?
Because, see, in the Matrix, you shouldn't know, and most people don't know. In Ready Player One, you know the world fucking sucks, and you're just playing a video game.
But this is like, you're all powerful, so it's not like you all equally have power in this virtual reality, right?
Right.
So the thing is, would you rather live in a virtual reality where you are all powerful?
Like, so you're like an admin on the virtual reality server.
Sure.
So
I guess it is more Matrix style of a question.
I think I probably have to go with... I got to go with the virtual reality, man. I got to do it. Because think about this. Like, if you were... If no one... So no one even knows I exist in the real world. I can't interact with anybody.
So, yes, but you can go anywhere. But you can't interact with anyone, and you cannot interact with anything.
As cheesy as it is, man, having all those experiences and the ability to go anywhere and do anything, it's just really hollow if you're just doing it all by yourself.
But what if it was right now at your current age? Like, stop. Now you're a ghost.
Right.
And you've had connections in your life so far. You've experienced interactions with people.
Nope.
Does that change any of it?
Nope. Give me the virtual reality.
Okay.
I'd rather, especially if I have the ability to log out and go back to real world.
No, you don't.
Stuck in it.
Stuck in it.
Is everyone else that I care about in there?
No, they're all AI.
Everything's AI?
I mean, I'm making this up as I go.
I know, I see that, but so everyone's AI.
Everyone's AI. That makes more sense.
A bunch of NPCs.
Yeah, but they act like humans, kind of like, not Inception, more like...
Okay, that changes things again.
Matrix-y, right? They
so it's
like
not like
humans.
An MMO, it's like I'm in a game, it's everything simulated around me as well.
Yeah.
Including the people.
But you're interacting with someone, just as they have just as much like heart and soul to them as a real world. Like,
but
a simulation.
I know they're fake.
You know they're fake, but you will always question, are they real or not? Because you wouldn't know.
That gets tricky. That gets tricky.
This is the podcast everyone needs on the coronavirus lockdown. You didn't want this, but you need it.
That gets really tricky.
So for all intents and purposes, they're humans, but they're not actual souls.
I probably still gotta go. I gotta go with the virtual world.
Okay.
I gotta do it. I just, not being able to interact with anybody would be pretty shitty after a while. I mean, think about it, like, what are things that you're into? Like, you want to, like, buy the collect things and stuff, and you want to do these things, have these accomplishments. It's not so that you just have them. It's so you can talk to other people about them.
Yeah.
And share them with other people. So even though you know that the people in the world are fake, you at least get to do that a bit. I mean, like, we play video games and, like, interact with NPCs in video games and, like, feel like those are, like, not obviously, like, a genuine relationship with an NPC character, but you're like, oh, it's tight. Like, I win, turn in this quest
yeah,
and did that.
You can feel emotions. Yeah, you can cry playing a video game.
Definitely. So I got to go with the virtual world on that. What about you?
Yeah, I'd be a ghost in the real world. For sure.
Wow.
I think my curiosity... I think my curiosity is what wins on this ghost in the real world. Not only would it be fun to just, like, walk into a NFL stadium and watch a game from the sideline, but even just the curiosity around, like, I could walk in an airport, walk on any flight, fly wherever I want. I could walk in the White House, listen to a cabinet meeting. I could fly to Iran and see what's going on. I could fly to Russia. I could fly to London. I could fly to South Africa. Just walk around, observe the human condition. These are the type of things that interest me in the world. So I think I would be a ghost in the real world, not only for, like, art and entertainment, but for, like, society and cultures. It would be really interesting to go to parts of the Amazon and find these cultures that no one's interacted with and be able to observe them without them seeing me. See, I'm, like, getting, like...
See, these are all super valid, but part of wanting to have any of those experiences, and I would almost argue the majority of those experiences, is so that you can then have them and then reflect them to others and give them and convey them to others. Like, what, like, saying, going, for example, the easy one that you said, going on the sideline watching every football game. Awesome. But football is way better when it's a social experience.
Yeah.
Like, you don't care to just take in football, like, for the stats and for the love of the game necessarily. It's about, like, being able to talk shit with your friends and cheer on your team with your family and all that stuff. Imagine if you didn't have that part of it, how boring it would get so quick. Because you'd only get half the experience every time. You'd get only the half where you're consuming, but you never get the half where you get to vent it and empathize and share it.
Yeah. Yeah, and in your world, you wouldn't be interacting with anyone real either.
Yeah, it'd be all fake, but I could probably... I feel like I'd have an easier time tricking myself. Because remember, I'm all powerful also in this virtual reality. So I could do those things, assuming there's cool shit like that in the virtual reality. Obviously, it is fake, and I would know that. But I bet I could trick myself into not thinking that because I'd have emotional bonds.
I think the biggest motivation for my list, though, is me just knowing the truth and the answer. I'm very curious.
Right.
Person.
But once you found the breakthrough answer to whatever mystery you're seeking,
yeah,
only you would know it, and you wouldn't be able to tell anybody.
Yeah, see, that doesn't, like, eat at me, though.
No?
No, it doesn't. No.
That's good. That's very interesting. This is a very philosophically deep question.
Just like if you said, like, I can go back in time and see, like, at the time when Jesus was alive or not alive, right. And if I could know if it was true or false, it would not hurt my feelings to come back to present time. And, like, somehow universally not be allowed to tell anyone.
Oh, see, that would drive me fucking nuts. That would drive me crazy.
But you are the type of person that would drive crazy.
Yes, yeah, it's true.
We're very different that way.
Yeah, as we were discussing before recording this podcast, I have to tell people when they're
wrong.
Wrong.
And I have to fine, do it. And I'm fine allowing them to be wrong. And we're just different that way. We're just wired. So I actually would be okay to just know myself.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. That's good. I honestly think they're both good choices for different reasons.
I mean, I love the God in the machine. I love being able to have the world be a sandbox of mine and I can create and control and do everything. That also means that you could probably space travel.
Yeah.
And you could invent anything and everything.
But you just always know it's fake.
Which also has this point of limitation where you'd probably get bored. You're like, I've built a country today. Okay.
Well, you would definitely get bored with the power.
Yeah.
But I just, I don't know.
You'd probably get to a point where you'd stop using it, actually.
And you would just start living normally.
Yeah.
See, and I think if you were on the other one, where you're,
like,
a ghost in the real world,
like Captain
you'd
America.
Never be able to, like, if you ran out of your curiosity,
yeah,
you would,
But you're also still, like,
what's next?
But you're also still in the real world, right? So you could still, like, watch movies, listen, or, like,
You could sit and watch a happy family.
You could follow a... Yeah, you could follow and just join a family and just live in their house.
You could just be their adopted child and...
You'd be like, God, Susie always fucking reacts like that. You just tap on the table three times when you're mad.
Yeah.
No, you could. Yeah, so... Philosophical question for question one.
I'm going to tell you something, that I have a couple questions. They aren't going to get that deep. So let's switch gears to some dumb shit. What was your favorite childhood toy?
Oh, yeah, I know what it is. 100%. Oh. It was, the second one just popped up in my brain.
Oh, shit.
I was so confident. No, the first one I thought of and is the right one is the... I had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles van that, like, the full-size action figures fit inside of.
Yep.
The side opened and swung open. The top popped off. It was, like, a two-scale size van of my Ninja Turtle action figures.
I know the exact van you're talking about.
And that was my second favorite one of all time was a Star Trek Enterprise ship.
Ooh, nice.
That's, like, the, yeah, anyway.
You know what's funny is that mine is also a van.
No, it's not.
What the fuck was... Vans were popping. My favorite childhood toy was the opening Micro Machines van that you could open up into a little city and drive your Micro Machines in. I still have it. It's in the garage.
What was like the... what was it called?
Vans were hot, dude.
What was like the, remember the, for lack of a better word, the girly version where like it was like a, it opened up like one of those pocket mirrors?
Oh, Polly Pocket?
Polly Pocket.
I only know that because motherfuckers used to call me that.
They called you Polly Pocket?
Yes, motherfucking kids.
Wait, I never knew you used to get called Polly Pocket.
Yeah, dude, it was before I knew you. Fortunately, I shook that by middle school.
Oh, I love that I remember that. But that's like similar, right? It's like this little world.
Yeah, it's like it opened up to like a little house or something. Yeah. Like a little, yeah. Dude, Vans.
We both picked Vans.
Yeah, dude, Vans were hot.
There's a reason we do this podcast together.
You know what? My track of the week has to do with Vans.
We do.
What's going on with Vans?
I'm not wearing Vans, but I have a lot of them.
Wow. Van week.
Yeah. This is, like, weird. Let's just move on.
Yeah.
Do you have any other, like, I have the Star Trek Enterprise, which I flew around the house and, like, made all the sounds. And
I mean, anything cars, like, I was obsessed with Hot Wheels. I got, like, I still got Hot Wheels all around in this room that we're in right now. Anything Hot Wheels. I was really into little green army men. Like, the little simple, like, you'd get the 100 packs.
Yep.
I used to, like, have, like, full wars with those. They had, like, tanks and shit. I loved those.
I like those, too. Back in the day when you didn't have cartoons.
Yeah.
You had to go outside in the dirt and make cities and race car tracks.
All the time. Like, that was my shit.
Yeah.
Setting up Hot Wheels tracks.
Man, we were so poor. I used to take, like...
Classic transition.
Oh my
how
God.
Poor were you?
I wonder how people can relate to this. I was so poor. I used to take our biggest blanket we had, and I would stand, and I'd crumple up into, like, a ball in front of me, and I would lift it up to, like, the height of my head and, like, drop it and step back, and how it landed was, like, a mountain, and I would drive my cars in and out of it.
I did the same shit. Identically the same thing.
That's the level of poor I was.
Dude, I did the same thing.
No, you didn't.
I maybe didn't do the whole stand routine, but I would take the... I would take the fucking... Dude, Hot Wheels and blankets were the shit, dude. I would take them, and, like, I'd sometimes go underneath the blankets and make it like a cave, and it'd be all wavy, and I'd, like, make little layers, and I would just drive them on the blanket. Dude, we were poor.
We were poor. I remember, like, dropping them and, like, being like, this is the villain base, and I'd put my action figures inside.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's great. Being a kid was awesome. Being a poor kid.
Also, being to the point where, like, you didn't have the right balance of, like, heroes and villains, so I remember I would have to, like, negotiate and be like, because I'm so poor, I'm like, Spider-Man, you're a bad guy today. And the whole day, I'd be like, fuck Spider-Man.
That's really good.
That's
imagination. The dying heart.
I guess that's less about being poor. Well, yeah, I didn't have enough fucking toys.
Yeah, that's being poor. You couldn't get the whole set.
Oh my god.
Spider-Man. Today's your day.
All right. I'm really happy we're doing this. Okay. Yep. My second question, less philosophical, for sure. What movie have you seen in your life that completely exceeded your expectations?
So, I had to think on this a while, because we did talk about this one, because
we did.
We talk about movies often.
Yep.
Now, the big one that I can think, and I'm ready for the recency bias.
You're the most recency biased person I actually know in my entire life.
It's Knives Out, all right? It's Knives Out, and it's very recent.
Wow. I'm actually shocked at Knives Out.
It was really, really fantastic, yeah. And I had the lowest expectations ever because I fucking hate Rian Johnson. I hated him.
He did.
Yeah, he has redeemed himself 100%.
With the one movie.
And also, he's redeemed himself because since all that hatred, episode 9 has come out, which I really liked. I really like episode 9. But I also kind of realized that just in general, the new trilogy of Star Wars films are just deeply flawed in a way that no one person could be blamed for it. And so I've actually taken some of the blame away from him.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like your backpedaling on the hate.
Yeah. He earned it. And Knives Out, really, really good.
Yeah. I mean, it helps that he controlled the entire concept of that movie, right?
Yeah.
Didn't he? He wrote it and directed. Or am
I think so.
Am I incorrect there?
I think he did.
We saw that together. Thing.
Yeah, we did. Right? That's great.
Yeah. We saw Knives Out when I was here in December.
We did.
So, I've been here 3 times in the last 6 months. That's weird.
When I live. Yeah, it's a lot of flying.
It's a lot of flying. Yeah, we're actually at your house. We're fully 6 feet away from each other right now.
Yep, fully social distancing.
It's actually kind of awkward how far away we are.
Yeah, we wore masks in the car.
We did wear masks.
Big fan of the mask movement.
Yeah, I kind of... Okay, we're getting super sidetracked. It does feel kind of cool mobbing around in masks.
It does.
With your squad.
It felt like what you wanted to do when you were a teenager, but you thought you'd get in trouble.
Especially
in fact, you would.
Especially because we have, like, trendy, pretty modern, cool masks. We don't have just, like, the cloth...
fucking styling
basic
on.
Basic-ass bitch Seahawks mask or something.
No.
There's at least 5 people listening right now that have a Seahawks
mask. You know who you are.
You know
you got the fucking Hawks on there. Like, the 12 on it.
If you have that, I still love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
And we love the Seahawks, too. Let's be real.
Yeah. Stop being a simp.
Fucking simp. Get your shit up. What's a movie that totally exceeded your expectations?
Yeah, it's 300. The movie 300.
Wow.
We went, saw this movie together as well. So maybe there's a thing there where if we see more movies together, we'll like them more.
Perhaps.
Actually, no, that's another bad story. I'm not going on a tangent.
Well, I'm very curious.
Huh?
I'm very curious as to what tangent you're about to go
it
on.
It wasn't an exceed expectation, but it was a Deadpool 2 conversation. But we're not going to talk about that right now.
Yeah, we'll
we saw
that
together. It's a very funny story.
That was a great time.
Yeah, we went to South Orlando with probably like 6 of our friends in Monroe.
Yep.
Back in the day where we used to sneak into the Galaxy Theater by walking in the exit.
Walking in the exit, man. That was the key. We spent a whole hot summer doing that.
We spent a whole summer. As soon as people walked out, you're like, slide your foot in right before it closes and let everyone in. Yep. We would go in the garbage. You want to know how poor I was? We hitchhiked. We hitchhiked to the movie theater. We had a friend that actually one time drove 2 of us to the theater, drove back, drove 2 more people to the theater, drove back, and drove 2 more people to the theater.
Yep.
Anyway, we used to sneak in the exit. We'd go in the garbage and find large, because it's only refillable size, so large popcorn and soda, go to the bathroom, clean them out with like soap and water, dry them, and then go get refills.
That was way before coronavirus.
When they caught on to us, we would have one person go buy a ticket. open the exit, hand the ticket to a person. Someone will walk back in like they've bought a ticket, hand it to the next person. They'd walk in like they bought that ticket.
The stub trick is hot. Dude, it's hot. It's all digital now, man. What are you
anyway, there was probably seven of us that saw 300. Manasseh is listening, of course. He's one of our homies. He does a lot of the sound drops for us.
Yeah.
He lost his goddamn mind seeing after 300.
Well, he loved it.
I think he cried because of how cinematic it was.
I don't blame him.
Yeah.
That movie was, honestly, if I would have thought of it when he asked me this question, like that would have been up there for me. Because I saw that theaters, like, we saw that 3, 4, 5 times.
Yeah, it was free every time.
Yeah,
but we.
Every time. Like, shit, what are you doing? Oh, I see 300, and whatever's playing next as well. We'll just hop into that one.
I think it was the first movie I had seen where when it had finished, I wanted to watch it again immediately.
Yeah,
it was one of those, probably the first one in my life.
I mean, just the energy in that movie and like the adrenaline rush of that movie.
Yeah,
it's just so far. I wanted a Leonidas beard so bad, and I feel like as I've gotten older, I finally started to achieve it.
Yeah. I can see that, yep.
But, like, I used to look at Leonidas like, that guy is that's the coolest guy ever.
Yeah.
Like, ever. Gerard Butler, even. Like, got that. Like, beyond just Leonidas. I was like, that guy's dope.
Yeah. The bullet time fight scenes in full, like, the highest frame rate possible.
Man.
It's just beautiful. It actually still looks good when you watch it in, like, full K HDR.
It does. It holds up.
It holds up and, like, still looks like modern graphics.
Ooh, it's so good.
All right. You got some?
Yeah, let's do this. Let's hop into some questions from listeners.
Oh, we have questions.
We do.
Okay.
Namely, we've got a handful of questions here from Ian, our buddy Ian, from back in the day.
Ian, yeah, what's up, buddy?
What's up, man?
I'm like in town. We should meet up sometime.
We should stand 6 feet apart in a parking lot and have a beer.
I would love that. Message me, Ian. I'll message you. Let's do this.
Let's get it. All right. Ian's first question he submitted. He knows us really well. What is your favorite Halo map?
Okay. Did he specify which game?
Nope. General Halo.
I think I know what yours is going to be.
Okay.
And it's only because you can get Warthog kills as the gunner. And it's got to be Standout.
Damn right, Standoff.
Oh, Standoff. Yeah, sorry, Standoff.
No, it's fine. It's fine. You're goddamn right, Standoff. As soon as you've gone like 75-1 on a map, that's your favorite map now.
You have. Yeah. I think so. Paul is the classic, oh, let me be the gunner on a Warthog.
Yeah.
Which, like, to your credit, you are better than probably 90% of gunners in the world.
I've got a lot of practice.
Because
I've had good drives.
The only thing that Paul can do. If there's any map that's on foot, he's like, oh, fuck, I might sit out this round.
Just skip this one. I'm going to go hide.
I mean, my favorite map of all time is Valhalla.
I mean, it's classic, you know, it's been around since, what, Halo 2, or is that Halo 1?
I think it's Halo 2.
Halo 2, yeah. Classic map.
And I think I like Valhalla because it is the perfect blend of either playing on foot or playing in equipment and vehicles.
Yeah, I don't know about the on foot part, never tried it, but the vehicle part of that map's great.
The laser right in the top of the middle. Mm-hmm. You have snipers in your base, and you can literally stand in your base and snipe the middle hill.
Yeah.
You could fight in the tunnels with shotguns, or you could drive around on hogs. You got the banshees.
You know, this is a great question because Halo, I'm going to say it, Halo has by far the best level design of any video games.
Oh, for multiplayer?
The Halo map design is so damn good.
It is.
It's staying good, too, because there's some really good maps in the more modern Halos.
It's really balanced.
It really is.
Yeah.
And especially back before loadouts in the Halo 2, Halo 3, when they had the power weapons on the map and you had to control certain areas. God damn, that was like the best time in gaming.
Yeah.
So fun. Those hog runs on Standoff, those hog runs on Paul, those hog runs on Brat's Nest, those hog runs on Sandtrap. What a great time.
Sandtrap for sure, because you would drive the big vehicles, elephants or whatever?
Yeah. Drive them up to each
especially
other.
Especially when you drive up to each other and they're touching and you do capture the flag, and it's like a melee mayhem.
God damn it, I love Halo.
I will say the least favorite map of mine is actually one you said. Mm-hmm. I would loathe every time Rat's Nest. I would say, so I Valhalla's number one. Standoff is number two, and actually Avalanche is number three.
Avalanche is so good.
That's a DLC.
That's another great vehicle map.
Well, that map also has the Hornet on it, which I love and I'm pretty good at.
What's that map in Halo 4?
We've lost about 300 listeners now.
Yeah.
How much we've talked about a game that came out 13 years ago.
Sorry. Anyways, next question from Ian. That was a good one.
That was a good one. Thanks, Ian.
Who is your favorite video game NPC?
Wait, hold on. Time out. I feel like I read these questions already on Facebook, but I don't remember this one.
Yeah.
So I haven't thought about it.
Tell you mine.
Are you going to pick a Mass Effect NPC?
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you really?
Yeah.
Man, I know you really well.
Garrus from Mass Effect is a badass. He's one of the best characters from any game ever. In fact, he is, because he's on this list of my favorite NPCs. Garrus is incredible.
I don't even know who that is.
Excuse me?
I've never beat the Mass Effect games.
God. Kill me. Kill me now.
I know, it's really weird, huh?
Garrus Vakarian is a fantastic character. You need to play it right now. You need to play all the Mass Effect games.
That
you need
game
to get on it. You're
is
in quarantine.
Like,
get on it.
The game's like 1,000% made for me.
Yes.
And I don't know what it is, man. What are we considering an NPC?
A non-player character?
No, I know, but like... That's really dumb.
A character from a game...
So there's different
that
things
you that, are not mainly in control of.
I obviously know what the fuck an NPC is.
But I'm saying it could be someone you control sometimes. But just
but when
not
I say
main.
Someone like... So I don't consider Bowser like a natural like NPC. So what I consider...
He's
like,
an NPC.
But when people say NPC,
yeah.
I think of like ancillary people you interact with that are not a part of the main plot.
Right. It main plot counts.
But you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
When
I think of NPC, Garrus, for example, is like a core character of Mass Effect. Who you even sort of control. But he's just not the protagonist.
Wow. Just because I don't have an answer, I'm gonna just pick one from my favorite game of all time. I'll say Kefka.
Nice.
Fantasy,
I like
Fantasy
it.
3.
And that's fine. It's someone who's got good writing, someone who's interesting, memorable.
Yeah.
A non-real person, a digital character that left an impact on you.
I know what an NPC is.
You
know
I don't
what
know if
question
you know
I was asking.
It stands for non-player character.
You know what question I was asking. You're just trying to make me feel bad.
All right. How about this one? This one I think is even tougher. Because I already thought about this question that he asked. And I am looking for your input on this.
I'm going to come back to his question.
Fair.
Later.
See you looking around the room at various video games
like
I have in here.
30 minutes from now, I'm going to give you the exact right answer to his question.
I like it. I like
and
it.
It's going to be his answer.
I like it.
He's going to pick a Doom character.
What type of game would EST20 be featured in?
Oh, like the music.
I took it as the music.
So did I.
But let's take it like this, too. What if we were characters in a game?
Because I took it the music, it'd be like an NBA 2K game, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like we could be on a GTA on one of the radio stations. That is like...
I prefer to be on GTA radio station.
Because honestly, on the PC version, you can do that on GTA. And I always put our music in there. And like I feel really important when I do that.
I feel like Novocaine could be in a Tony Hawk Pro Skater like 7 game.
Man, that'd be sick. Dude, Tony Hawk Pro Skater, I learned so much good music from those games.
Yeah, me too.
And Crazy Taxi. Man, I learned all about the Offspring from Crazy Taxi.
Crazy Taxi, yeah.
Wow. Great time.
But what about if we could... I mean, a GTA game is the game.
That's the ultimate
Which
choice.
Makes sense for us and our personalities.
Yeah.
To be in a GTA game, but...
Or we can be like, if we were characters in a game, we can bring back the Def Jam Vendetta series.
Oh.
And be like a fighting trio in a fighting game.
Mm, I'd want to be in Fable so I could kill Corey.
Just finally have done
I
with
can
him.
Grow my horns.
I like that a lot.
Have the flies around me.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense just how our music sounds to be in a sports game, but I mean, I'd much prefer GTA.
Those games are great.
I don't know how like Sephiroth didn't pop in my head. I'm like really getting mad at myself.
Dude, there's so many, like, just from like Rockstar games I could think of, just from BioWare games, like just companies that like know how to write dialogue. That's all it takes, really.
The Scouts and Age of Empires. the most useless NPC in the history of gaming.
You're randomly like looking around the map in late game and you're like, why do I have a guy over here? Oh, it's that fucking horse guy. Like, oh yeah, I sent him over here like 4 hours ago.
When you get to like the last Age of Empires, you can like upgrade your scout to have +2 armor. I'm like, they still only have +1 attack. What are they gonna fucking do?
The scouts.
Speaking of, the Age of Empires 2 4K re-release that came out like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
I have played so many hours of that game.
Wow.
They have new civilizations that you can play as, like brand new for this 4K release.
Really?
Yeah, there's like 40 now. It's
wow.
Incredible.
I didn't know there were that many civilizations to pull out of history.
Oh my God.
There's already so many. There's already like so many I never even heard of.
I'm going to let this go.
I need to read a book.
Anyway, if anyone's playing that, hit me up. I would love to play multiplayer with you.
All right, let's move on. Let's move on to another segment so you can think longer about who the perfect NPC character is besides the fucking scouts from Age of Empires.
Yeah, I have a handful of like more rapid-fire questions, but I feel like we've been going for a while, so I agree with you. Let's move on to
Track of the Week.
It's time for the Boss Fight Podcast Track of the Week.
All right, we're here for Track of the Week. This is where we give you some new music for your playlist. This is where I am very unoriginal and pick a rap song every week. And Paul is the one person you wouldn't think does, but goes outside of the box with his recommendations.
Not this week.
So, Track of the Week, what do you got, man?
So, last time I made a joke that I was going to play a local artist who needed some exposure and some help and picked a Drake song.
Speaking of, his album just came out 40 minutes ago.
Ooh.
I'm about to play the whole Drake album.
This week, I actually am doing a local artist. And this is a guy that I've known for a while. His name is formerly Ryan Taylor. His name is now Ryan Van Huygen, which is kind of a mouthful. One word. He's got a new song out called A Man in a Van.
Man in a Van.
Back to the van talk. It's just kind of a fun rap banger. Just put on for some local rappers.
Yeah.
That, you know, artists are struggling out here too in lockdown, you know?
That's not even a joke. That's a real thing.
That's a real thing. Yeah. As a matter of fact, like Corey and I were going to be doing a show put on by Ryan Van Huygen that got canceled, unfortunately, because of COVID-19. So show him a little bit of love. Give this some plays. It's on all the platforms. Man in a Van. Here we go.
I'm making turn pink like fuchsia. I'm what you gotta get used to. My legacy's something unusual. Weird Al, but I'm more original. Jim Carrey, but I'm God today. In a galaxy far away.
All right. That was Man in a Van, which is a pretty fun song.
It is.
Yeah. I mean, he's not necessarily a comedy rapper, but like this is a pretty comedy-filled song. I like it.
Yeah, it's got some funny vibes for sure.
Yeah.
Little Dicky-esque. I don't know if that would offend him or not, but take it or leave it. He kind of got some Dicky vibes.
His first three bars of his verse are little Dicky vibes.
Yeah.
And it's really just his the tone of the inflection of his voice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool song. I like that. My track of the week is not a local artist, but it's someone that's not on your radio, if people still listen to those.
Yep.
And songs by an artist called Lute, L-U-T-E, and he is on J. Cole's record label.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now I'm interested.
The song is called GED. It's Getting Every Dollar.
Nice.
And similar to Cole, he's not like a mumble rapper. And
like
he's
that.
Got like good content to his music.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like this vibe. He's on the compilation, J. Cole's compilation album that he put out last year. I think Lute's on three of the songs. What's interesting is he's on one of the most popular songs, but he's not credited. So if you go to like Spotify or Google Music, there's four artists he's the fifth artist on that song, and he's not credited, which is really weird. Don't know the story on that, but this is Loot GD. Here you go.
Bang. Just got in the habit of switching the flow. Just trying to travel the globe. Tired of being underlooked in this bitch. Tired of hearing I can't wait till you blow. Had to step out of my shell for a bit. Cuzzo told me put my foot on their throat. Had to let go of some niggas last year. Wish they let my nigga out on parole. Niggas used to bump the warm up by cold. While niggas used to warm the house with the stove. Shit, if he made it out of this bitch, ain't no telling where my talent can go. Skinny nigga from the foe. Used to battle rap niggas for bread when I'm bored. Fuck with your boy. Used to swerve in a Honda Accord to the store. Hit up the midget for Newport.
All right. So rap songs recommendations for
you. Boom. You better like rap if you listen to this podcast.
I have been listening to other genres. I've been listening to R&B. I listened to like the Party Next Door album. I listened to the Weeknd album. Big time snores. If I was to pick one, I would pick the Weeknd album. Is much better than Party Next Door.
The Weeknd is very, very good. But yeah, you're not going to catch me listen to a back-to-back list of love songs.
Have you... because we're still in the music section of our podcast, and we're not putting ourselves on because we're humble.
Yeah.
No, did you pay any attention to these like Instagram battles of artists and producers and DJs?
A bit.
It was a huge thing. It like took over the world. Like literally,
it was huge.
Hundreds of thousands of people watching these battles of like the shittiest music quality you could ever hear through a cell phone.
Yeah, I watched little clips here and there. It didn't do it for me. I don't care that much.
I hated them.
I want new music. I don't really care. Right. I know what you guys put out. Like, if they were going to do, like, battles, like for example, I saw, was it Manny Fresh and Swiss Beats, was it? And they played just their hits, you know, which is what a lot of them are doing. If it was, like, Manny Fresh versus Swiss Beats, like, hey, make a beat in 20 minutes.
You have an hour with the same sample.
Like, that would be so fire. Maybe. Like, I would tune in for
that's
that
a real
all
battle.
Day. That is real. And people do stuff like that. People so, do. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, shit, are they, like, beat battling like that, like that's sick. And it was just like, oh, play your hits, and Swiss Beats obviously wins because he has a million hits. And don't get me wrong, I love me some Manny Fresh, but
well, Swiss Beats also has swag in a battle because he does a lot of hooks on his songs.
Yes.
So he can rap while he's playing his songs, and Manny Fresh does the same thing, but Manny's doesn't got that swag.
But he did do the hook on I'm Still Fly, which is one of the best hooks ever made.
Okay.
Gator boots and the pimped out Gucci suits. Ooh. Ain't got no job, but I still fly. Fire, dude. Come on now.
All right, that's it for Track of the Week. Y'all welcome.
You're now listening to the Boss Fight Podcast.
G'day, universe. Welcome to the Boss Fight News. Oh, yeah.
All right, we are here with our news of the week, topics of the week.
Yeah.
We have a short list of things that we want to talk about. We had multiple people hit us up about this first thing we're going to talk about. And look, I appreciate it, but we didn't need y'all to tell us about this. Final Fantasy VII Remake dropped. And we're going to talk about it right now. We are both pretty close to the same distance through the game. Paul's on chapter 9. I'm on chapter 11 or 12. We're going to do like spoiler free, of course. But so you don't need to like skip through this or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Cool thing about this is I was in a part of the world that got this game early.
Mm.
So Australia got this game. I think I bought it 2 weeks before it was out here in
Very
the United
jealous.
States. It was so early in the game where like, or sorry, it was, I got it so early that on PlayStation, you couldn't even take screenshots. You couldn't record video.
Wow.
It like totally locked all that capability.
That's pretty funny.
I didn't know they could do that.
I didn't either.
Which kind of makes sense because they do like pre-releases and like
I was very
copies.
Mad that you got that early because, man, I was hyped for this.
Anyway, first impressions, dude.
Dude, I love it. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, it is so good. It just captures the vibe so well of Midgar. And I know there's people out there who are gonna be mad that it's, you know, chapters based, like not necessarily within the game, but as in this is only one game of several to come. But they expanded on the Midgar section of the game so incredibly well that I don't even care. Like, it feels like a complete awesome package so far.
I will say that as well. Okay, so this how can I say this? This game I think was intentionally called Final Fantasy VII Remake,
mm-hmm.
and not the Final Fantasy VII Remaster.
Yes.
And I think that language matters.
It does.
Because it's not a, we're going to make this exact same game with new graphics. It is, let's revisit this game. If we were going to tell it different, mm-hmm. how would we tell it?
Yep.
Change some plot parts. What's missing at the beginning of the game? Well, we see in the first like hour, Sephiroth, who's not in the first hour of the original.
Right.
So they go back and look at the narrative and say like, okay, this is a pretty good game. Everyone loves it. But like, it's still deeply flawed.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What if we actually fix it narratively? We adjust the plot, we change the pacing, and we do it right. And that's a remake.
Yeah.
That's a remake. That's like when you see the first Dune movie and they're going to make the new Dune movie. They're going to be very different.
Yep.
And no one's going to complain that is, well, people will complain that it's different.
Always.
But it's a remake. They're not taking the exact same shots, the exact same scenes, the exact same angles and making it new graphics.
Right.
They're making a new movie and they're saying, how can we make this good? How can we tell the narrative better? All that to say, that's what they do with this game. And it is better.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's better storytelling. There's more intrigue in the beginning. There's more mystery in the beginning with the wisps.
Yep.
There's more, you know, it's more
it's interesting. It's very coherent. You understand, like, where you are, why you are, how, good. Like, what's going on
they
in the world.
They explain everything very clearly.
The world's very clearly understood. And you got to think, I mean, the original came out in, what, 97? So it's like they've had a long time to sit and think about it and, like, what could we do differently and what could we do better? And now they're not facing the same limitations that they did, you know, that many years ago. So back then, while they were trying to write this epic long story, which they did. I mean, it's a great story and still one of the most beloved games ever.
It was four discs.
It's like they were also struggling with like, how do we do this on PlayStation 1 and what they had at the time and with no voice acting and just text only. So it's like, this is like, it's like a free, you know, second chance for them. Like they get to do it all over again, however they want. And it's awesome. Yeah, awesome. I'm actually glad they're breaking up in multiple games. As much as people are mad about the money that that's going to be, and I get it, I love it because it means they're going to really like painstakingly flesh out everything you ever wanted to know about this world.
See, and I really don't get the complaints because, look, by the time I beat this game, I'm going to be playing 50 to 60 hours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's a full game.
Yeah.
I would easily spend $150 for the experience I've had already.
Yeah.
Halfway through. And there's plenty of games. You know, you buy Elder Scrolls Online for $60, and then a DLC is $40.
Yep.
Second DLC is $40. All of a sudden, you're like $300 into the game, and I don't hear that being like a big reason to not buy Elder Scrolls Online.
Exactly. And it's just so good. Like, dude, the combat's really good.
It's shockingly good.
It's great. I mean, like, it feels so fluid, and like, it's really challenging at times. And, it's, man, it's good. The graphics are gorgeous, too, by the way. Like, it looks so good.
So those cuts between the CGI cutscenes and then you playing, you usually notice in the game a huge drop in the resolution and rendering.
Yep.
Man, it's hard to tell in this game.
It's so seamless. It just does that camera pan. You know when you see that one pan?
The 90-degree
you know you're
camera
about to be
pan.
Playing, yeah. So get ready. But, like, oh, it's so good. I love how the summons look and how the summons work in general.
I like how the summons that you can control their actions and their...
so tight.
You don't control them, but you choose when they attack and do their special moves and all that.
So tight.
It's seamless changing between characters. The battle's great. The voice acting's wonderful.
Voice acting's really top-notch.
Yeah. And I like some of the changes they've made already. I like that they've made... Well... They've made Avalanche. Actually, you know what? We're not going to give any spoilers.
Yeah. Don't spoil it too much, but it feels like, to put it in a nutshell, it feels like they've taken a over 20-year-old story and really modernized it.
Yeah.
It really does. Like, the way... Because storytelling has changed. Like, the way that movies are, the way that TV series have changed. Like, releasing every episode of a streaming series, for example. What that's done to storytelling and how coherent plots are carried out, and they have, like, this kind of form factor that they fit in. You could tell they took a lot of that and were like, okay, instead of just, like, filler and, you know... doing whatever we can with whatever we have, it just feels like they really sat down and made a really polished product. And I don't know, man. I'm only on chapter 9. I think there's like 20 chapters or something like that. So about halfway.
I love Cloud Strife.
He's amazing.
He plays a lot better now with voice acting. I would say his personality's the same, which you can't really say. But his, like, whole stoic, like, fuck all y'all.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't. It comes off really well with the voice acting.
It comes off so good with the voice acting.
Like, you get it. You get that there's, like, more depth to him than just, like, typical hero, don't care about this. Which is how characters in just text would come off and how he came off.
But I love how much of not just a classic good guy is, where he, like, literally tells people he doesn't care what's wrong with, like, what's going on with them.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm not helping you. I don't got time for that.
Yeah.
I love that.
I do too.
His character plays way better with the voice acting. Tifa's cool. Barrett is awesome.
Barrett's awesome.
The look of Barrett and also his voice actor is quite fantastic.
Yeah.
I like him more. And the mini games are kind of fun. So
darts.
You do the boxing yet? Or not the boxing. Yeah.
The squats? Yeah, I just did the squats like 2 days ago.
Did you do all three?
Yeah, I've stomped them.
The squats are fun. The darts are hilarious. Fun.
The darts, I got an actually perfect game on the darts. Throwing all 60s.
The whack-a-box is fun.
Yep. Yep, I got that. I'm like trying to platinum trophy this game.
I think the whack-a-box took me like 6 tries to get the 30,000 or whatever.
Yeah, the that was pretty tricky. Through. It
That's
is.
That's what I did.
It is. Skip
you run
some things.
Through all the first boxes.
And when you have those two big hard to break ones, just do a couple of your like abilities
Bravery
on them and then get past it. Braver like twice Braver, and then run past the other one.
Exactly.
And yeah, and then get to that end.
Get to the end where they're all stacked.
That stuff's so fun.
Anyway,
that game's really fun.
That's all non-spoiler. Yeah, it's really good. I catch myself smiling.
Yeah.
While I'm playing.
It's the most fun I've had with a game in a while. And as we've discuss. I don't play that many games that have been coming out, but this is definitely worth the time, especially with all the time we have right now. I mean, it's like I couldn't imagine a better quarantine remedy than this game.
It's also the first game in quite a while where my wife, where Alyssa is like, don't play this without me because I want to watch the story.
Yeah.
And that just makes me like want to marry her a second time when she says stuff like that in my ear. Don't play this without me. I want to watch the story of Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy is such a great franchise.
Doesn't this
man.
Just prove just how god tier Final Fantasy is?
It really is. Like they had a couple rough years where I wasn't really invested at all, and I'm totally back. Like I'm 100% back. This actually playing this makes me want to go back and play Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah,
which I skipped completely because now I know I like the combat, and I think 15 is roughly similar type of combat. Yeah. And
you didn't play 15?
Not at all. I didn't even touch it.
It's like, oh man.
It didn't look like something I was into because I was really stuck in the Final Fantasy X turn-based battle, just that old style, and it seemed like it was like almost too modern, too flashy. I didn't like the combat.
I'm not gonna say the graphics are just as good, but Final Fantasy 15 is up there, bro.
And yeah.
You know that's the highest selling Final Fantasy game of all time, right?
Yes.
Well, it helps that it released on multiple consoles, but it's number one. And most people reviewed it positively. It's a really good game.
I'm gonna go back and play it after I beat this.
Yeah.
Because now I know I like it. I know I like the style.
Proud of you, man.
Thank you.
So that's our first impressions of Final Fantasy VII. If there's something specific we didn't talk about that you want us to, message us on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter. Just find Paul or I or the Boss Fight Podcast. We will continue to talk about Final Fantasy VII Remake. Don't you worry.
Yep. And then we'll beat it and do like a full review, full breakdown at some point with spoilers.
Yeah, and if you think we're being too soft on it, you could feature on this podcast.
Yeah.
If you want to call in and leave us a message, we'll put your audio on the podcast.
Yeah.
Tell
us why we're wrong and why Square Enix is ripping you off. Please.
How many games have you spent $60 on?
Seriously.
Where you played like 6 hours of the game and you're like, never touched it again.
I mean, like, it is getting great reviews. It really is. But every time, if you go into a comment section, which don't get me wrong, that's the worst place in the world, the comment section on any video game related article, you're going to see so many people going, oh yeah, $60 for just Midgar. $60 for just the first piece of a game. How much money are you trying to steal from me? Worth every penny.
That's got to be people that didn't play it, right?
It's got to be people who can't afford them. Got them.
Fair enough, got them. I was so poor that it drove me to, as an adult, have enough money to spend
on games.
I don't
know what happens in the second installment of Final Fantasy VII. I can only afford the first one.
It's so silly to me, because would you rather them squeeze the whole game into 50 hours?
Hell no.
Or would you rather get four 50-hour games.
I mean, this game was like a 90-gig install or something on my PS4, and it's like game one. I mean, what were they supposed to do?
I had to delete a bunch of stuff.
I did, too.
I would much rather them give me this full render, high-quality, full res.
Yeah.
And I won't be mad if games, if, you know, parts 3 and 4 are on the PlayStation 5.
Nope.
Like, y'all just calm down.
Yeah, please do it. In fact, re-release this one. I'll buy it again on PS5.
Oh, I would definitely.
With the hot graphics and some, then move on.
Yeah, it's going to be Skyrim vibes where you'll be able to buy Final Fantasy 7 Remake on your phone, your iPad, your PlayStation. Well, in the future, your Xbox, your Switch, all that. All right, that's Final Fantasy 7.
Epic.
A weird thing that's happened since, like, last time we podcast is the wave of Tiger King has come in and disappeared already.
That was one of the biggest waves I can recall.
It's the most watched documentary in the history of humankind.
Is it really?
Yep. I read that last week.
Did it pass, like, Making a Murderer?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, easy. It wasn't close.
I mean, I'm saying, like, was that number one before? I bet it was. Or up?
You know,
up
I don't there. Know. I don't know.
Because that was a huge wave, too.
Yeah, so what I read, most watched documentary of all time, which, you know, is not the most proud thing for humans to be watching for a documentary.
No, it's not, but we did both watch it.
But I watch a lot of docs, you know, there's a balance there.
Yeah. I turned on, I had seen, like, one post about it. Someone on my Facebook said, Tiger King is insane, and I had no idea what they were talking about. And then I went on Netflix that evening.
It's the main splash.
And it was the main splash. And I said, oh, Tiger King, this is what they were talking about. And, like, watched their little 1 minute
Which
thing that they do. And was like, oh, this is that guy that, like, ran for president. Because I remembered it from John Oliver.
Yes. And you and I went and watched his campaign videos.
Yes.
As he was doing them on YouTube.
Which were phenomenal.
Phenomenal. We back in the day, we used to laugh at
like, he should have won. But... So then I sat and my girlfriend and I watched the entire series in one sitting, front to back, and
which is incredible.
It was such a ride.
Pre-puppy, obviously.
Pre-puppy, yeah. We never could do that now. It was incredible. I mean, just the way that was laid out. Honestly, my initial reaction was what a lot of people's is, where I was like, Joe Exotic's kind of tight.
Yeah.
He's kind of tight. They do a really good job with spinning the narrative of, like, this guy's kind of, you feel sorry for him in a way, and you like him in a way because he's so out there. He's just he's just doing him, you know? But as the fervor took over the world after I had watched it, and I started to really think about it, I was like, that guy's a piece of shit. Like, the worst.
The worst.
Like, absolute monster.
Yeah, I mean, when we watch things that's through someone's point of view, there's always a little, sympathy.
Yeah.
And kind of, like, rooting for them to, like, turn things around.
Right.
When, obviously, if we were to watch this from someone else's point of view, we would have thought he was terrible from the beginning. He could have easily been the villain of the whole show.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sexual predator.
He's a fucking sexual... There.
I mean, that strikes 2 and 3 right there. What else do you need?
He's a terrible human.
He is a terrible human. He's a
sexual
human.
Predator. How are there how are these tiger people all sexual predators?
Like Dog Antle?
He's
a cult leader sexual predator.
Well, yeah, he's terrible.
But so
especially because Doc recruited women pre adults.
Yeah.
And Joe at least picked, 18, 19-year-old boys.
Straight boys.
Yeah. Obviously, there's not too much of a difference, but there is a big difference.
Yeah, he's a sexual predator. I mean, that's just right off top. Second off, he He would breed and sell tiger cubs just to be petted by people because humans are disgusting and feel that they need to do things that no human should do.
Yeah.
And a lot of those tigers ended up getting killed when I grew up.
Well, I mean, and he treated his employees like shit, and he...
Ripped people off, tried to kill a lady.
Yeah. Have you seen the... we talked before this that we weren't going to talk a long time about Tiger King. But did you see this new, the latest like interview episode they released?
I didn't watch it, and I'll tell you why. It's because the one headline I saw about it was this made a mockery of the entire show and is a waste of time.
Oh, I don't think it made a mockery.
Because it was just Joel McHale making a bunch of stupid jokes.
Well, he's really annoying.
I hate Joel McHale.
But there's a story in there that makes jokes out even worse.
Oh?
I'll tell it to you.
I
want to
hear it. Yeah, this is new. This is groundbreaking.
It was the guy doing the original documentary on Joe Exotic.
That cool, like, old-timey weird guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he told a story. Was it him? I think it was. And we told the story of this lady that brought a horse to Joe Exotic's, like, compound.
Yeah.
And said, like, I can't afford food or take care of this horse anymore. I want to leave it in your care. And Joe told her, like, oh, yeah, of course. Like, we'll take care of it. You can come visit the horse or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making this really short. As soon as she leaves, he shot the horse and fed it to the tigers.
Wow.
Yeah. There you go.
I mean, I'd rather the tigers have some food.
Then the horse live? What's the difference? You're a hypocrite, man.
Look.
You're a hypocrite.
Look. That horse wasn't going to have a very good life.
You don't know that.
That horse had given all it had to give. And its next act in life was to feed some majestic, beautiful, glorious tigers.
I'll allow you to say that just because this podcast is supposed to be helping make people have fun.
Yes.
And I'll let that laugh pass, but I do not condone that laugh on the horse dying.
Yeah, fuck Joe Exotic. And you know what also? All the Carole Baskin backlash. Look, Carole Baskin, wacky as shit. She might have killed her husband, sure. But those are allegations. And I'm really sick of like how the most hated person out of the entire series is Carole Baskin. And it's because she's a wacky woman.
Yeah.
That's 100% what it is. It is because men, even some women, it's because of the patriarchy, hate women.
No, but it's true. You're right. There's just as many. I see just as many women posting about Carole Baskin.
It's because of the patriarchy.
Yeah.
They hate women. They hate wacky women. They hate powerful women. Women who are like not afraid to be themselves and kind of branch out and say weird shit. And that is 100% what Carole Baskin is. She's just kind of weird. She has a bit of a checkered past. Like they kind of touched on how she used to do the breeding thing too.
She did the exact same thing.
But the fact is, she has pivoted. Who knows how good the tigers are being cared for? It looks like she's trying her best, but she's not breeding them. She's trying to take them from breeders. That's at least partially a really good and important act that she's doing. I really think so. But everyone's so caught up on that she might have killed her husband.
Yep.
And they're so caught up on the fact that she's just a weird lady. Well, and that has let them overshadow the fact that there's a fucking sexual predator starring in this. And everyone's going, yeah.
Two.
Fuck yeah, Joe.
Two pretty serious sexual predators.
Right. Right. I keep forgetting about Doc Antle. Like, he's somehow above it because he's so clean and polished.
Yeah.
Like, he's not as memorable as Joe. But, like, that guy is disgusting.
Yeah. Carole, the biggest problem I had with her was just, like, the hypocrisy. Like, you take an animal in a cage and you put them in a smaller cage and tell the world you're doing good.
Right.
When, like, that's not any better.
The only good thing she was doing is not breeding. That's it. Not breeding them. But still, she's trying to profit off tigers. And
she's profiting the same way off people doing tours and visits. And
yeah. It's not that different.
There's no one in that show that's really doing great.
No. I mean, everyone in that show sucks.
It's sad that this is the most watched documentary.
It really is, because it's like, here is the butthole of America on display. Check us out. Because it's like, it's terrible.
Yep.
It's very Florida man. Like, the classic headline of Florida man does XYZ, that is that show in a nutshell. It's like the absolute worst of the worst people.
Yeah,
it's funny. We didn't want to talk about this too long because it really has died down. But now that I'm thinking about it again, I'm getting re-angry. But also, it's a really good documentary for what it was trying to do.
It was so well made. Because episode, you're like, okay, this is the craziest shit I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And it escalates every single episode.
Yeah, it's incredible.
How does it? There's stuff that they like reveal like towards the very end where I'm like, I would have led with this in episode one.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't make this.
The control of the people that put this documentary together, they actually did. Yeah, it's one of the best. It's almost a perfect documentary.
It really is. It just had an agenda.
Yeah.
It had an agenda. And that's honestly the problem with a lot of documentaries is they have an agenda. Same thing you could be said for Making a Murderer. Making a Murderer did a really good job of painting. Have you watched that yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they did a really good job of painting Stephen Avery as innocent, or as someone who's framed, and he very well could have. I think the evidence clearly is that there was like a conflict of interest, and the police, there was a lot of police corruption, but he still probably fucking did it, right? I took away from that, like, yeah, he probably did it, but it was investigated poorly and he didn't get that fair of a trial, which yeah. I care more about justice, so that's kind of shitty. But I just, they had such an agenda, and it was the same thing here. Just these Netflix documentaries tend to be that way. But man, like, there's nothing better than when, like, a hot documentary drops on Netflix.
Yeah.
Like a 6-7-part series, and you're like, oh shit, it's time. Like, we're back. It's go time.
We spend our Sundays watching documentaries.
That's yep.
Our Sundays reserved for watching either like a standalone or a series.
Yep.
But
super random. I love it. Oh, Tiger King.
All right. What else did there was something else you wanted to talk about?
I wanted to talk about the move to on-demand movies and the beef that has been bubbling between AMC and Universal Pictures.
Yeah, that's breaking news as of yesterday.
It is.
There's some like big time shakeup stuff, and I hope everyone listening is aware of what's going on. The New World Order's taking over your entertainment.
They're coming for
you. Okay, so let's
They took our jabs.
Now, let me just lay this out really quick for everyone, because this is my thing. So, Universal released Trolls World Tour on digital on-demand rent. So, didn't want to come out in theaters, obviously, because of coronavirus. And unlike a lot of these other movies, decided to release it for at-home rental for, in the U.S., $19.99.
Very expensive.
Pretty expensive, but $60 cheaper than you and I going to a movie. Because
sure.
We both buy tickets, we buy popcorn, we buy soda, all that.
Sure.
So instead of delaying it, they're like, let's just release it on rental. Well, here is what happened with Trolls World Tour. It made $100 million so far in the first 30 days on on-demand rental. That is more than the original Trolls made in 5 months in theaters. It is deemed a, lack of a better term, pardon the pun, a universal success. Got him. And what this has resulted in is Universal saying, going forward, which this is actually blew my mind. It wasn't even a suggestion or we're thinking about it. They've already said, going forward, when theaters open back up, all Universal, dude, you guys, people listening, Universal is not a small box office deliverer of movies, okay? Universal's huge. They said,
who owns Universal?
Go for it.
Comcast. You know what Comcast has invested interest in? On demand.
Of course. So, they've announced that when theaters open, every single movie of theirs, every single one, 100% of them, will release at the same time, both at home rental and in theaters.
Yep.
Okay? And the reason being, they make way more money on at home rentals.
Yes.
So, break down some quick numbers for you. This is all off my head because I've been obsessed over the story.
It's a big deal.
They made $95 million so far off rentals for this movie. $95 million. If they wanted to make that same revenue in theaters, that movie would have had to do $154 million to equal that 95 because the theater takes a 50% cut.
Yeah.
50, give or take. Obviously, you can do the math, 156 to 95. Yeah. So they would have had to do $156 million to make the same amount of money, $154 million. So they're like, why don't we just release it as rental? This has now resulted in AMC Theater, as of yesterday. This is really great. Hopefully this is clear. AMC Theater yesterday says,
a very struggling company right now.
A very struggling company that, what, just filed for bankruptcy?
Well, they're
close. Out, yeah. They said they were going to file for bankruptcy. They got a stimulus check. They're still open.
Yeah.
Okay. They now are getting real cocky. And they said, when we open up our theaters, fuck Universal, we will not screen any of their films at our theaters. This is the biggest movie theater chain in all of the United States. Yep. They are not going to show a single Universal movie. So now we're in this deadlock. Who's going to cave first? To me, obviously, I think Universal will, or AMC will cave first. But Paul, what are your thoughts on this in general?
So first off,
I can't wait for this diatribe.
First off, AMC, I will side with you on this. They're being really stupid. Like, they are not in a position of power right now at all. In fact, they're on the opposite of that. They're in the worst position they've ever been in.
So I think there's two conversations here, because there's the actual, like, take on what Universal is doing and the take on AMC.
Yes.
So I think we both agree.
I'm sorry with AMC.
Okay.
AMC is, this is a stupid tactic for them to take. But the reason they are saying this is because they know that if a movie comes out on demand and in theaters, there is going to be who knows how big of a percentage of the people, once we're not in quarantine, and we could argue about how big that percentage is. There's going to be a percentage of people who want to go to theaters, and there's going to be a percentage of people who want to stay at home, even after we're free of this quarantine.
Right, because there's going to be tons of people that, even though, let's say the government says everyone's tomorrow can do whatever they want, there's still going to be probably, you know, let's say, throw out a number, 30% of the population that's like, you know what? I'm still going to take my life responsibly. I'm not going to go to any social events.
There, and we have talked about this on a podcast in the past, and I told you that I think consumer habits are going to change.
Forever.
And that I think that they might change forever. I think that's really possible. I think there are people in this world who are changed at least for a long time from this. Now,
your day-to-day life has changed permanently from this.
Whatever percentage of the world that is, AMC looks at that and they say, okay, it costs us this much money to put these movies in here. It costs us this much to operate our business. We pay this much in rent, which is like astronomical with that prime real estate.
Yep.
And they say, okay, it's not, if 30% of the people watch this at home instead of the theater, we will lose money on this when we could be airing something else. Now, so that makes total sense why they'd have a problem with it. And it's odd to me that these distribution companies and the theater companies didn't already have some sort of agreement that prevented this.
Yep.
That's odd. And the reason that didn't exist is because streaming services are so new in the grand scheme of entertainment.
Yep.
And I bet you that AMC, that theater companies in general are kicking themselves for not having pre-done something about this and said, we will only air all of your movies, every company, if we get exclusive rights to it for X amount of time.
Yeah, because...
So it's odd that that didn't already exist.
Because it could be similar to video games, where AMC makes a deal with Universal and says, we'll pay to have, actually, Universal movies only in AMC theaters. They won't be in Regal. They won't be in these small mom-and-pop theaters.
It's actually been great that that hasn't existed.
True.
But it's weird that, in general, there isn't, like, a theater union, for lack of a better word, who hasn't said, okay, no matter what, for us to ever show any of your movies, we get exclusive rights for this much, and here's why that makes sense for you, because we'll pay you this much money.
Yep.
That should have already existed. In fact, it didn't. It's mind-blowing. But now we're in this position. Now, AMC's taking, like, I think the wrong tactic. It came off really bad in the press. Who knows what it's what their tone's actually like. We don't know what they're actually talking to
Universal. I still don't know why they wouldn't just see how it worked and see the numbers and look at the data.
They're scared too. They don't want to see that data, and they don't want the trend to take hold, right? Yeah. So as soon as we're out of quarantine, the first time this happens, like say the next Fast and Furious movie comes out and it's own and it, they do this and it's a huge success at home, AMC's already fucked. They're done. Right now, AMC can say, and this is where we might differ. AMC can say right now that this movie was only so successful because everyone's stuck at home in quarantine.
Talk about trolls. Yeah.
It was only so successful because everyone's stuck at home. They're starving for a new entertainment. People have kids at home that are bored, not at school. They want to entertain them. Here's a new movie that they like. And it's just right there. Boom. I turn on my cable box. Boom, click. It's just right in front of my face.
Yep.
And I think AMC knows that a lot of the success came from there, but they're scared to see if it's bigger than that. Like if Fast and the Furious, which is a huge, like the quintessential popcorn movie that you want to go see in the theater.
Yeah.
If freaking half the business sees that at home, AMC's fucked. They're done. Why would the theater ever need to exist? They're not going to make money. Their overhead is so big, which is, you know, we could talk about whether that's an archaic model in the first place and whether it should already be gone. I love going to the theaters. So anything I argue, also, you got to look at it through that lens too. I'm a huge theater fan, so I'm going to be biased in that way. But I still think that for the people it employs, for just social experiences, it's really important. And it's scary if they do this.
Yeah, see, I love this idea.
Yeah.
Okay. I love this idea. I sent this in our group chat between yourself, Corey, and I. We have the most epic group chat that's ever existed. That there's so many movies, man, that I say, why would I watch this in theaters? I'll wait till it's out and rent it for $4.
Right.
Or I will wait until it's on Netflix and I could stream it for like no additional cost in my life, or right. Amazon Prime or whatever. That's a lot of movies I do that with. That's every comedy movie. I will never see a comedy in theaters unless I'm going with friends.
Right.
There's just a lot of movies where I'm like, I don't need to see that on the big screen. I don't need to see the new Tom Hanks movie about homeboy down the street. That was my favorite
one. What? That is whole genre now. That's what Tom Hanks does now.
I don't need to see that in theaters. I don't need to see the Stephen Hawking biopic. So all those movies I really want to see, but I'll just wait, right?
Right.
So this is where I think they'll actually make more money, because me, some of those movies, I would be sitting at home on a Saturday night, Alyssa and I would be like, what do we want to watch? And instead of loading up Netflix and seeing movies from 2 years ago, I can go, wow, this is in theaters right now. Do you want to pay $20? And we'll be like, yeah, we're doing pretty well off for ourselves. We could spend $20 on a movie.
Yeah.
We'll sit at home with free popcorn that I'll make.
Yeah.
We'll have a bottle of wine that only costs us $15.
Yeah.
And we will save money on a date night. And the Universal is actually making more money off of me than me waiting for that to be on Netflix. Now, I get that that's like killing possibly the theaters, but for me and my experience of movies, this is better. And the movies that I want to see in theater, I will go see in theater. I'll go see Tenet in theater. I'll go see 1917 in theater. I'll go see all these movies that need to be seen on a big screen. But if I'm seeing the new Will Ferrell movie, I can sit my ass at home and watch this movie in front of my TV.
But what if this move does kill the theaters? Then you can't go see Tenet in theaters.
There's always going to be boutique theaters. Always. There's still theaters that show movies from the 30s, okay? And that's where they make all their money.
Right.
There's always going to be boutique theaters.
But is that really what we want? Just little boutique theaters with like not that much money and not that many of them, and you can't just go to the mall and there's a movie.
I mean, I don't see it getting to that, man. Because what I'm saying is this is an ad. So if I'm making... Let's use really rough numbers. Let's say 100 people are going to see this movie in theaters. But instead now, 60 people see it in theaters and 200 people see it at home.
Yeah.
That's the math. This isn't like a... This isn't cannibalization in terms of like total viewership.
Yeah.
I think more people... Like, I think the people distributing these movies, Universal, Fox, all these people that are distributing these movies, what I'm saying is they're going to make more money off of this.
But you got to remember, think
and
though, too.
And as a consumer, I will feel better sitting at home watching some of these movies.
So Trolls did better than box office, but you got to think, too, that these movies are making money in other ways, right? So they have the box office,
yep.
And then they have home video release,
yep.
And then they have deals with streaming platforms,
yep.
And then they have, obviously, merchandise and all that stuff. So movies are making, they have other revenue streams than just the theater.
None of that changes, though.
None of that changes for the company, except it really, so that's why, okay, so like Universal, it's like a win-win for Universal.
That's what I'm saying. They're going to make more money no matter what.
But I don't know that that's a win-win for the consumer, for the consumer that wants the theater experience, because that will kill the theater experience. And Universal is making enough money, like they're hugely profitable, that they don't, I don't know why they would need to crater the theater industry to do that. Like, why can't they, like, say, okay, going forward, we'll only do a one-month theater only? You know, 1 month you could see it in the theater, and then we'll do on-demand release. Instead of the same day. You know? Because then you could upstate. Because we've already started going away from the days back in the day when it was, like, 9 months later you get the home video release. Because that sucks. That's, like, the worst. See, that was the worst time. When you were like a kid and you go to the theater and see a movie and like it would be in theaters for a few months and like you wanted nothing more than to see it again and you can't, you had to wait a year. I'm glad that's gone.
Yeah.
But I think that I just think it would be really sad for the consumer and for the state of filmmaking if the theater went away. Because I think the spectacle of the theater is like so much of the driving passion of filmmakers.
Yeah, and I don't think the theater will go away, man. So like when, okay. So right now, let's say the Regal Stadium, that's the closest theater to us probably. We're in near Everett, the Everett Mall.
Yeah.
Has like 18 screens.
Yeah.
So any given day we go there and those seats, like 90% empty on a Tuesday.
Right.
All screens, all 18 screens or wherever much it is. 18 screens, empty. The most people in any single showing is 20 people on a Tuesday.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And let's say, you know, episode 9 drops, they play Star Wars on all 18 screens.
Yep.
See, this is where I get into like the math of it. That theater should really only have 6 screens.
Yeah.
And if those 6 get full and the other like remaining screens are now people at home watching them, I don't see Regal going out of business. Those 6 screens will still be full because I think they waste space as it is. Most theaters are wasting a shit ton of real estate. They have way too many screens. They're only full, what, every 3 months when an actual real big release comes
out? Something big,
yeah. Half the year, these things are empty. They sit with no one in them. They rent them on Sundays to fucking churches and businesses. And I guess what I'm saying is like we already know they're not full because they rent them out. They do parties. They do all this extra crap.
It's pretty valid.
And I think,
so you think the future of theaters is smaller then? They should go smaller. Like that would be the right response to this. And,
well,
and
I guess
that,
like
you're okay with that.
So I don't see it being, I guess my whole reason for bringing that up is like, obviously you're talking about theaters going away. I don't think that happens. And I don't think they'll get to boutique like I'm saying. I just think that they'll be more realistic. And I think AMC would be more profitable, right? Because you're actually, you have less overhead. Your theaters are full more often because you have less screens.
AMC was billions in debt prior to the shutdown.
That's what I'm saying. Can we really say they need 18 screens? We all know that they don't.
Right.
And most of them are in debt. You're right. Already. Right. It's not like they're profitable now. So I think, I don't know. Maybe this is a wake up call for them to be like, okay, maybe you need 4 screens in Bellingham.
Yeah.
Not 12.
It's interesting. You know, I mean, see that.
Gonna, I think
that
both... is
like talking about like, the theater on a Tuesday kind of helps put it in perspective. Because when I think of the theater, I think of like it's packed and a hot movie's out.
Which is so like it's once a quarter.
That's infrequent. Yeah, it's very infrequent and it's only on the weekend. But with that said, I mean, the box office is still a multi-mega billion-dollar industry.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of money's made there.
Not as much as video games anymore.
No. Interesting.
It's crazy.
But I don't know.
Anyway, we're talking about this out loud. You and I haven't. It's the first time we've talked about it at length.
I think I might just fundamentally have a problem with it because it also feels like so antisocial to just watch everything at home, you know? But it's like,
but I mean, come on.
I'm also coming around to that anyways. So like I've been slowly warming up to that idea of like maybe social distancing is okay, you know? Yeah. So I've maybe softened on that stance a little bit, but I'm just like I have this urge to be like old school about it and
for sure.
And think of it back in the day and not want that change. Same reason I don't like when Netflix drops every episode of a show at once.
Yeah.
It feels like the same type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, that instant gratification society. But you know what? Yeah, movie theaters have been robbing us for decades, you know, also.
I mean, they make, what, 80% of their movie or money off concessions?
Yeah. They've been charging us, you know, $12 for popcorn for way too long.
Which is like 60 cents worth of actual kernels, right?
Yeah, maybe 5 cents.
Because you can buy a bag for like $4 that makes like 18 of that size of popcorn.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. This is kind of just our first thoughts thinking about it. I don't think either of us is right or wrong.
Well, how about this?
Because we don't
who
know
do you
what's
going to win. Like, what's the
Universal's going to win?
You think they're going to commit?
Yeah.
Or do you think that AMC will find some angle?
No. There's way more theaters than just AMC.
Yeah.
You'd have to get all the main theater companies to agree to this.
I could see them following suit.
Yeah.
I think that AMC was pretty brazen to step out like that, but I could see Regal.
And I know that this is like you mentioned, I agree with you that a kids movie during lockdown, if there's one movie that's going to be successful, and we talked about how some of these other movies that went to straight to rental did bad, but like the big movies got pushed out. We didn't get the new Fast Furious movie drop. We didn't get, if Wonder Woman would have dropped for rental, it would have made all of the money.
Yeah, that's going to be the real test.
Imagine last year, coronavirus happened during Endgame release and they decided to release it.
Right.
And you're telling me you wouldn't have sat at home and rented Endgame?
Absolutely would have.
Like, so what I'm, the big movies are still the big movies. The small movies are still the small movies.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if you're sitting on your ass or you're going to a theater. There's going to be movies that people will pay to see and movies that you'll wait.
I'll just say this. People are going to need to start upgrading their surround sounds and their TVs.
Bro, I'm buying my 80-inch as soon as I get to Toronto.
Gotta do it.
OLED.
That's the theater now, man.
I'm dropping 7K.
You're going to have to get a theater room now.
I'm going to get a theater room.
Dude.
I think it's going to be in my basement.
We all got to do it.
My YouTube studio theater room.
We all got to do it.
Because
we don't want to hear Martin Scorsese complaining about people watching his movie on their phones anymore.
Oh, he's definitely not doing any deals with Universal.
No.
Although he did release Irishman on Netflix. He's such a hypocrite.
I'm mad about it. He didn't even say that. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I see your side on this. I don't want to change, but I understand change.
I just...
I'm also a little stir-crazy from the coronavirus, but... Yeah. I've gone past stir crazy and wanted to get out to, you know what, home's all right. I like home.
Do you have any other topics you want to discuss today?
Dude, that's it.
Let's end it on something light.
We've been rambling for a while.
Let's end it on something light. In honor of Super Mario Bros. 35th anniversary, Nintendo is said to be getting ready for a big celebration in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
They plan to re-release most of Super Mario's 35-year back catalog this year.
I love that. Love it.
This is like a month old news, but remaster of Super Mario 64. Oof. Remaster Super Mario Sunshine.
Love it.
Remaster of Super Mario Galaxy.
Love it.
Paper Mario. Yeah. All the 3D titles.
Yeah.
This is kind of a big deal.
It's a huge deal. I want to buy whatever they put out.
I mean, we don't know if they're actually going to do this. There's no official press release, but there would not be a rumor so significant if it wasn't happening. If they're remastering Mario 64,
that would be so dope. Like that's a game that, like, even with my like retro console setup I've been working on, it's like that's a game that's really hard to go back and play, because it is ugly. Man.
Just use the same engine as Odyssey. If they just use the same engine as Odyssey,
yeah,
we're good. I don't need any more improvements.
Just port that map in there and all the items. You're good. That's all you need to do.
Some of the angles are so hard in 64.
Oh man.
Like changing the camera angle,
yes.
And you're so lost.
Yeah. Trying to use that fucking stupid controller.
Is it the C stick where you're trying to?
Yes. Yeah, I like that idea a lot. That's a remake remaster that I definitely support. Any Mario games like that, I would love to get like a, especially if they did like a bundle, like when Rare did that bundle with all the old Rare games. Like that was sick.
Like, would you pay like $150, $200 for all the Mario games?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
All right.
For sure. Especially if they release like a dope collector's edition where I can get some sort of statue or something. Sucker.
Oh, yeah. If they had an exclusive amiibo that you could only get.
Copping.
Yeah. Okay.
Copping big time.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyway, I hope that happens. That's a light way to end this episode of the podcast.
I like that. That's much better than the demise of the movie theater that I love.
Some good deep dives this week.
We had a lot to talk about. It's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's it for the podcast. Anything you want to leave the audience with, my friend?
Just stay safe. Find something to escape into in your mind while you're at home, since you can't escape into the world.
It's got really weird, but you guys do great. We love the support. You guys are the best. Get excited for... Like, realistically, probably, like, July, August, we might be doing some live streams and testing it out.
Yeah.
I also want to do some watch-alongs, like, rewatch an older movie and do, like, a commentary track for it live.
Oh, my God. Can we do Armageddon first?
We can do Armageddon.
Yes!
Armageddon first.
First.
I don't think we'll get as many, like, viewers, but I'm down to do Armageddon
first. Don't give a shit. It's a good trial run.
So we'll be, like, you know, we'll do one of those, like, 3-2-1 starts, and you can sit at home and watch it with us or watch it later, but we'll do a live track commentary. We're going to start doing that sort of stuff. when I'm officially in my new studio, close to the same time zone as Paul. It's going to be epic.
Very epic.
Anyway, future plans are afoot.
Yeah.
Until then, be safe. Deuces.
Peace out.